This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I am your host, pharmacist Eric Christensen. Thank you so much for listening today. I hope you enjoy this episode. Before we get to that, be sure to go check out reallifepharmacology.com. Snag your free gift from me, a 31-page PDF on the top 200 drugs. I really did my best to highlight the most important clinical practice pearls, as well as the most important test-emphasized pearls as well in that kind of cheat sheet study resource. So again, 31-page PDF, absolutely no cost to you, simply for subscribing and following the podcast when we have new episodes and new content out. So again, reallifepharmacology.com is where you can find that. All right, so let's chat today about rifaximin. So rifaximin is not a drug I see used on an everyday basis by any means. The brand name of the medication is Xifaxan, and it is technically classified as a rifamycin antibiotic. So if you remember from a previous podcast, I believe I've covered rifampin in the past. One of those drugs that's definitely very notorious for drug interactions. I'll talk about that further in a little bit with rifaximin. But rifaximin specifically is limited to the use basically of gut problems and gut infections. So C. diff is a common infection that we use oral vancomycin oftentimes, but rifaximin is a potential alternative in the management of C. diff. So again, probably not a first-line medication for C. diff, but you know, certainly a viable option that can help manage that type of infection. Probably the second most common situation I've seen this medication used is hepatic encephalopathy. And there again, it isn't necessarily a first-line agent. For hepatic encephalopathy, what you'll often see is lactulose used to help lower ammonia levels. And that's usually titrated to, you know, 2 to 3 loose stools per day. But in some situations, we don't get enough ammonia lowering, or the patient is experiencing intolerable diarrhea. Lactulose is a laxative type medication, and if patients are having too much diarrhea, obviously, or too loose of stools, obviously that's going to be an issue when it comes to trying to adhere to taking the medication. So again, rifaximin is kind of a second line agent in that setting to help manage that type of situation. Other rare, you know, off-label uses, pouchitis, small intestine bacterial overgrowth, traveler's diarrhea. Again, I don't see those very often in my clinical practice. By far, the two most common are C. diff and hepatic encephalopathy. Dosage forms that we have available at this time, there's a 200 milligram and a 550 milligram dosage form. And you will see this medication dosed 2 or 3 times a day. It kind of depends upon what we're treating and that type of thing. So there can be some significant pill burden issues, as well as thinking about adherence and making sure patients are taking that medication regularly. The more often we dose it, you know, the less chances we have at getting that, you know, close to 100% adherence. Mechanistically, it works the same as, you know, any rifamycin type antibiotic. It inhibits bacterial RNA synthesis, and it does that by blocking DNA dependent RNA polymerase. Now, one of the most kind of unique things with rifaximin is the pharmacokinetics. So rifaximin has an incredibly low oral absorption. And so that can be a really, really good thing in the sense that we don't cause a lot of systemic, typically, adverse effects. Okay. However, if we don't get, you know, absorption through the gut into the bloodstream, that means that we can't really treat systemic infections with that medication very well as well. So that's why it makes sense that, you know, in an infection like C. diff or, you know, traveler's diarrhea or that small intestine bacterial overgrowth, hepatic encephalopathy, those are really gut issues. And that's where the drug kind of stays, and that's where it remains. And kind of emphasizing that fact, from a pharmacokinetic standpoint, rifaximin is 96%, approximately 96% excreted in the feces unchanged. So that tells you that that drug really doesn't go anywhere very much. So again, medication is not meant for systemic infections where there's, you know, bacterial, you know, growth in the bloodstream or other areas, compared to, you know, a drug, let's say, just pick amoxicillin, which obviously has good systemic absorption through the gut because we, you know, use it for things like ear infection or sinusitis or things of that nature. So the drug gets distributed well, versus rifaximin, which does not get distributed well in the bloodstream at all. So adverse effect profile, as you could imagine, if we don't get a ton of systemic absorption, we're probably not going to have a great deal of risk as far as systemic adverse effects, and that's generally what we see. So by far, most common is going to be nausea and GI upset. In the event there's, you know, somewhat significant systemic absorption, you know, we could have some dizziness, some fatigue. There's also chances for some rare skin type reactions as well. But again, not going to be very, very common at all there due to the pharmacokinetics of the drug. All right, so let's take a quick break from our sponsor and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material, like geriatrics, pharmacotherapy, ambulatory care, medication therapy management, NAPLEX exam, or the psychiatric exam, definitely go check out meded101.com/store, STORE. We've got links to tons of different resources there, big packages, question bank only areas for those exams as well. In addition to that, if you're not a pharmacist, if you're a healthcare professional, recently put out books on drug interactions, food-drug interactions. We've got Audible books available, case studies, scenarios, lots of unique resources based on my experience as a clinical pharmacist. So definitely go support our sponsor, meded101.com, and help support this podcast. Again, all those links, meded101.com/store, STORE. All right, so finishing up on drug interactions. So recall, it is a rifamycin antibiotic. So it is in the same class as rifaximin's in the same class as a drug like rifampin, but we don't have that systemic absorption to a significant extent. So typically our standard drug interactions that we see with rifampin really isn't a big issue with rifaximin. Some of note, potential typhoid and cholera vaccine effectiveness can be reduced by the use of rifaximin. P-glycoprotein inhibitors could potentially increase systemic exposure. So probably a little bit more concerning in, you know, polypharmacy patients, geriatric patients, where maybe we're a little bit more sensitive to that. Drugs like amiodarone, macrolides, some of the azole antifungals, verapamil, those P-glycoprotein inhibitors could potentially increase systemic exposure and concentrations. There have been associations with an interaction with warfarin and the potential to reduce warfarin concentrations. So that's unclear exactly how that all works out, but I think it's important, you know, pretty much any medication that you start in a patient taking warfarin, it's probably not a bad idea to at least look that medication up and potentially check an INR if there is any cause for concern in that type of situation, if a drug like rifaximin or another antibiotic is started in a patient on warfarin. So again, not a huge amount of drug interactions with rifaximin specifically, but I wanted to point out a couple there. So I think that's going to wrap up this episode on rifaximin. Hopefully you picked up a few practice pearls here. If you enjoyed the podcast, leave a rating review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. I greatly appreciate those of you who have already done that. Yeah, it's really helped keep me going, as well as helps us with search engines and things like that. So greatly appreciative to those of you who have certainly done that. Also, email, share us, you know, Facebook, Twitter, whatever social media profile you're on, Instagram. Share our podcast with friends and colleagues. It's meant to be free. It's meant to be helpful. And you guys, certainly with your support at meded101.com, will continue to make this podcast free and educational for all to enjoy and benefit from, whoever needs it there. So I'm going to sign off for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you're looking to track me down, Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCGP, BCPS on LinkedIn. Otherwise, you can check me out at mededucation101@gmail.com. If you've got a comment, question, or anything I can try to help you with. I try to get through all my emails. Sometimes it takes longer than other times, but I do my best to keep up on that, and certainly appreciate hearing comments and questions from you all. So with that, signing off, take care. Hope you guys have a great rest of your day.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.